Coming up on episode 344 of Wheel Bearings, you got the Acura TLX Type S, the Mercedes-AMG GLB, the Honda Ridgeline Trail Sport, the end of Fisker, almost, the Genesis Neolume and GV60 Magma concepts, the Hyundai refreshed Hyundai Santa Cruz in Tucson, the BMW Vision Neue Class X, the Jeep Gladiator Mojave, the Xiaomi SU7, battery reports from Cox Automotive, and the Kia K4. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 344 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Sandwich from Guidehouse Insights.
And I'm Nicole Wakelin with CarBuzz.
And I'm Perry Stern with a whole bunch of different places.
Hey, Perry. We've been trying to get you on the show for weeks now. Just couldn't seem to get schedules aligned. And we finally got you. Glad you're able to join us this time, finally. Robbie is off. Last weekend he was snowboarding. I don't know what he's doing today.
I thought he was still snowboarding, but you're right. That was last weekend. I'm off that week.
Well, we are recording on Friday. It's Friday evening here. We're all in Eastern time for a change. Robbie's on the West Coast, so it's still his work afternoon. So I think he actually had some work stuff to do.
Oh, whatever. Excuse me.
What a concept.
Work. Yeah.
And of course, it's Eastern, you know.
That's
so
my fault. I was like, I've got Easter weekend stuff. I'm Eastering on our normal recording time.
Yeah. So,
priorities.
So Perry.
Yes.
I mean, I've known you for a long time, but you're new to the Wheel Bearings audience. You know, I think when we first met, you were still at MSN running MSN Autos. But what, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I was at MSN. I started actually in this industry in the, I guess, early 90s, doing auto consulting for a firm in Seattle, helping people decide what kind of car to buy. And then Microsoft started this thing called the Microsoft Network, as people now know it as MSN. And so I started there. They had a site called CarPoint. Actually, it was CarSource back then, long story, but became CarPoint. And I started out writing blurbs about every single trim of every single car, which was so much fun. but the job was great. And, you know, so I worked at Microsoft starting in 1996. I got hired on full time in 1998. And I think around 2000, I took over the editing of what was then now MSN Autos. So we were one of the top online automotive sites in the country. We used to cover international auto shows with a team of about 20 of us that would go to every show and then translate everything into 14 different languages for every MSN market around the world. That was a lot of fun back when I had budget to do things like that. Microsoft budget, which was really cool. But about 2014, MSN changed their plan. They went to not doing any content in-house anymore. So they were only working with content partners like Car and Driver, Road and Track. So a couple of us started our own company, became a content partner, and continued to contribute to MSN, which I still do today. This is now almost 8 years later. But I've since, you know, have now doing freelance work for places like JD Power, Capital One, US News, TrueCar.com, a couple others. And I, like these other guys here, drive pretty much everything there is, everything from Kias to Lamborghinis. And I wanted to do this since I was 15 years old, so it worked out really well.
Okay, I learned something new. I never really registered that MSN was Microsoft Network. It was just Microsoft.
Most people don't.
In my head, I'm like, I never thought about what those letters stood for until this moment.
Did you know that MSNBC was actually Microsoft NBC?
Well, I knew it was NBC. I knew it was
the MS and MSNBC was originally Microsoft.
It was a joint venture. So it was going to be an online only news
venture. Network never came into my mind when I saw that. I somehow made it some weird abbreviation, like an airport code that doesn't make sense. I'm like, whatever you want, Microsoft.
It was just medicine.
Right.
Oh, all right. Well,
so that's me.
Now that everybody knows who you are, Perry, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Let's start with you. What have you been driving this week?
So actually, I've been driving it for a whole day. I got it yesterday when I got back from New York. It's 24 Mercedes-Benz GLB AMG 43. Yayo.
Wow.
Which looks really cool. It's red with the black wheels and the dual exhaust. I mean, it's got the proper AMG look to it. It's got the black seats with the red trim inside. It's the most expensive version of the cheapest SUV they make. So, you know, it's about, you know,
the top of the bottom,
$70,000. What's that?
I said it's the top of the bottom.
Exactly. Something like that. But it's fun to drive. It's got around 300 horsepower. So it's not like an AMG GT. It's not doing 0-60 in 2 seconds, but, it'll do it in about, I think four or five. But it handles like an AMG car. I mean, it's got great steering, great handling. It sounds good. You know, it's a fun little car, but it's not cheap.
Well, it's both a Mercedes and an AMG on top of that. So it can't possibly be inexpensive.
Yeah. But the nice thing is it's still an SUV. I mean, and I like, you know, the GLA and the GLB kind of came out at the same time. GLA is the kind of looks like a sedan almost, where GLB looks like a proper SUV with the boxy shape. And I've always liked it better. It's a nice size car. You can actually fit stuff in the trunk, in the cargo area. So it's,
Is it a three row or a nice two row?
Two row.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a small one.
Yeah. Cause I know they've had three row versions of the GLB. I wasn't sure if they had that, if the AMG was available with three rows or not.
It is possible. I know that this one does not have three rows though.
Okay. All right. Cool. And how much was the GLB?
The sticker just slipped my mind, but I believe it's about 68,000 is the one I'm driving.
Which is kind of cheap for Mercedes.
It's cheap for Mercedes, but again, most expensive of the cheapest Mercedes.
Okay. Anything else on the GLB?
No, I don't think so. I'm looking forward to spending a little more time with it. I even took it down the dirt roads this afternoon after I got pictures of it nice and clean. You know, it does just fine, you know, down, you know, now that I'm here in Michigan, enjoying all the dirt roads, it works quite well.
No, that's, you know, what we call pavement here.
Yeah, it's loose pavement.
Yes.
Loose pavement. Loose places where it shouldn't be.
All right, cool. Nicole, what about you? What have you been driving?
I am driving the Honda Ridgeline, and I have the new Trail Sport trim, which is, I think they've done Trail Sports on a bunch of different things at this point.
They've got them on the Pilot and the Passport, because I had the Passport Trail Sport
a few weeks ago. The idea of being the Trail Sport, it's the more off-road capability. But the thing is, a little bit. I still don't think it's not like this is a Ranger Raptor or something, or a TRD from, you know, the Toyota lineup. So it's a little mild off-road capability. But the thing with the Ridgeline is they would say it's a full-size truck, but then people will say it's a compact truck. Then compact people say it's too big. But then full-size people say it's too small. So it's this weird.
It's a mid-sizer.
It's just right. I really like it. And it's funny because I feel like hardcore truck guys just do this like, it's not a truck. It's not really a truck. And I'm like, shush. It has a bed. It does truck things. Just because you don't have a Raptor that's, you know, this giant thing, doesn't mean that it's not really a truck. And what I remember the very first time I ever drove a Ridgeline, which was probably, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And the thing that struck me was it was the most car-like ride of any truck I'd ever been in. You don't feel like you're driving a truck. It's comfortable. It's easy. It's very smooth. And you know what? Not everybody wants to feel like they're in a truck when they're driving one. Like, they want some of the capability, but they don't want the bounce. They don't want the jostling. They don't want some of the harshness that comes around from driving a truck, especially when there's nothing in the bed. They bounce around like crazy. This is really well-mannered. And it was funny because even my daughter, when she got in, she's like, have we had this before? And I said, we probably have had a Ridgeline once or twice over the time I've been doing this. She's like, I really like this. She said, it kind of feels like a car inside. So she thought the same thing. I'm like, go kid, nice assessment. So I really like the Ridgeline. I think because it's a very specific truck for a specific person, though. If you're the guy who wants to have huge tow ratings and a huge payload rating, and you want to like just that burly truck in your face style, you're not going to be happy with this because it's not that. But if you want some of what a truck does, if you want that capability, if you want a bigger truck, if you want something that can, you know, bring stuff to the dump, tow stuff, this will do it. But it's not the outrageous truck. It's not, it's like the reasonable truck. It's what most people probably actually need.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan. Yeah. So I'm a fan overall. I like it. And I think, you know, the styling is nice with a little Trail Sport badge on there. So they did a nice job with it. I do find that when they do these off-road trims, like what it's Trail Sport with Honda, Subaru has Wilderness, right? Isn't that what they're doing for their sort of more rugged version? I apologize for not having everything at the ready. My Monroney turned out to be just a laminated piece of plastic. Not an actual Monroney. When I looked over, it was a white paper in a piece of laminate. I'm like, I don't know what happened.
They forgot to actually print anything on
just
it first.
A piece of paper. I'm like, well, that's unhelpful. So I was trying to pull things together. But, you know, none of these off-road trims are sort of these that they apply to an entire lineup of vehicles, like across the Honda lineup or across the Subaru lineup, is something that's going to turn it from mild-mannered vehicle into hardcore off-roader ready to take on the Rubicon. That's not what these are designed for. They're to give you a little bit extra, come with, you know, a little bit of a lift, maybe a little better tires and a few little details here and there. So they're kind of off-road light is how I would describe it. So if that's what you're looking for,
off-road-ish.
Yeah. So that's I feel like what you get with the Ridgeline, and I like it. And I'm glad they got rid of, what do you actually call them? I always think of them as buttresses, those little angular pieces years ago went from the cab.
Yeah, that's kind of what they are. Yeah,
I was driving down the highway and I was next to an older Ridgeline that had them. As I was driving by, I sort of did that like, oh yeah, those needed to go. Like it just did not look good. It looks so much better since they got rid of those. I don't know if this generation or was it one prior, but it was a big deal. And I'm like, yeah, it looks so much better. They kind of made it look goofy. Now it looks like a proper truck, just smaller.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, the Ridgeline, you know, is always, this is the current one is the second generation. And it's always been based on the Pilot. It's a version of it's the same platform as the Pilot and the Odyssey. Right. And the Passport,
which is why it drives like a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it basically is a car. But when they designed the second generation one, they got rid of those buttresses. You know, and the first one, you know, very clearly looked like a unibody design because there was no separation of the bed from the cab. The new one, the current generation one, is still a unibody. But when they designed it, they deliberately created a fake seam. So it looks like there's a gap between the bed and the cab.
It was something that it is not.
Yeah, but if you get up close and you look at it, you realize it's solid. Mm-hmm. There's no gap there.
So basically it's a pretend pickup pretending to be an off-road truck.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, sure. That's the advertising, Perry, just like that.
Yeah. But Honda was going for.
But it's all the pickup that most people actually need.
Well, isn't that it? That's the thing with, and I think people do it more with trucks than SUVs. Some people get a little bit more SUV than they need, a little bit bigger, more cargo than they're ever going to need to put in there. But with trucks, people really tend to do that. Like, no, I need to have a high tow rating. And you're kind of sitting there going, why? You're taking two cans of trash to the dump each week. How much capability do you think your pickup truck needs to actually?
I might buy a camper someday.
Well, my neighbor, my neighbor across the street, he's getting ready to drive his new vehicle out to Colorado to get it upfitted. He bought an F550 chassis cab.
F550?
Yes. He's getting upfitted to be an overlanding rig. So it's a crew cab and there's no bed or anything on it. And he, you know, last week he had a hitch installed. It's a 30,000 pound hitch.
Oh my God.
That's bolted on the back of the frame for this thing.
Wow.
And, I mean, I guess he can tow 30,000 pounds easily with that thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
And you know, and he's going to take it out to Colorado, have a flatbed installed and a camper put on the back, and then get put on skid plates. But he's been, the last couple of days, I came back from walking my dogs and he was out working on the exhaust. Because when he put the hitch on, there wasn't enough clearance for the tailpipe, And so he took off the exhaust system and heating it up. He's got, you know, welding equipment and everything in his garage.
He's messing around.
And so, you know, he heated up the pipe, you know, straightened it out a little bit to give, you know, give a couple inches of clearance between the tailpipe and the hitch. And now he's rehanging it back on there. Yeah, this is going to be quite a rig when it's all done. But that is not what 99.9% of people actually need. Yeah.
No. I think one of the cool things in the Ridgeline too is the trunk. It has a trunk in the bed of the trunk, which just adds to the usefulness.
Yeah, you like open the tailgate and then there's a lid just opens up and there's a trunk in the trunk kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's neat. And you know, their tailgate opens different.
And there's a drain plug in the bottom too, so you can use it as a cooler.
I feel like they were early on the idea. Like, you know, now everybody's doing all this weird stuff with their tailgates and doing all these extra things. And I feel like Honda's like been there, done that. Like they were already working at making the tailgate of their truck do more than just close up and keep things in place. I think they sort of started that. So I like it. I think it's cool.
Well, and you know, before the Hyundai Santa Cruz and the Ford Maverick came out a couple of years ago, you know, we regularly said that the Ridgeline is actually the truck that most people that buy pickup trucks actually need. You know, it'll tow 5,000 pounds. It's got about 1,400 or 1,500 pounds of payload capability. You know, it's got a good size bed, you know, so you can put lots of stuff in there. They've got the tailgate that can either drop down like a traditional truck tailgate, or it can swing out sideways. You know, you got that trunk, the lockable trunk in the bed, so you can put stuff in there, or you go to the beach and, you know, you can throw your wet stuff in there and drain out the bottom. And you know, now, you know, you can go, you know, with the Trail Sport, you can go, you know, out to a cabin, you know, over, you know, a two track road. I mean, you're not going to go, you know, to Moab with this thing, but you know, you could
go to Moab, but then you would get into other vehicles.
Yeah. But then you want to get into a Jeep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the Ridgeline's a good truck. It's underrated by a lot of people.
That's what I think. Somehow it's just sort of forgotten. I don't know if it's because people just don't associate. I mean, in the we just think of trucks, and you think of Ford, and you think of Chevy, and you think of Ram. You just Honda. Like it, I just don't think people think of it. But this is a solid little truck. I mean, can tow 5,000 pounds. It's a decent truck. It's just totally overlooked. And the other thing that kind of makes this kind of neat. So starting price on this comes in technically just a skosh under 40 grand. It's $39,750. So you can get into one of these for under $40,000. The top trim is 46. The Trail Sport comes in at 45. So you've got a couple of trims in there, but you're not spending $75,000, $80,000 on a truck. Trucks are not cheap when you get into the other OEMs. So this is quite a deal. This is a value. So I think you get a lot. And Honda's, you know, they're known for kind of just going and going and going. So they're good in terms of their reliability and being around for a while. So if you are going to beat on your truck a little bit, you're a little bit more likely to have it survive in something like this.
And, you know, you mentioned, you know, people kind of forgetting the Ridgeline, you know, and, you know, right now the Ridgeline's in kind of a weird place. You know, they've just refreshed it. You know, they put a new grill on it. Mm-hmm. You know, they added the Trail Sport, but, you know, in the last year and a half, 2 years, all of the other midsize trucks have been completely redesigned. You know, you get new GMC and Chevy trucks, you get the new Ranger, you get the new Tacoma. Mm-hmm. Actually the oldest one other than the Ridgeline is the Jeep Gladiator.
Yeah. Which is crazy when you think about it. So and it's not that the Ridgeline is horribly old, it's just that the cycle is off. Like everybody else doing trucks. Honda, you just wait. Then Honda's going to be new and everybody else is going to be old. But right now it's in the section. But even saying that it's old, it's still
good.
Yeah. You don't sit down in it and think like, oh gosh, this is in desperate need of some attention. It's not the fanciest truck on the planet, but it doesn't actually feel dated inside. It feels just fine. If you didn't know that it hadn't been redone in a while, the others have been redone more recently. If somebody didn't tell you, you're not going to immediately assume that when you look at the inside.
Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying for my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. Did you know you can support Wheelbearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia, and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. Yep. All right. Anything else on the Ridgeline?
No, that covers it.
All right. Well, I also had a Honda product, but it's a little bit different. It's not quite like the Ridgeline. I had the TLX, the Acura TLX Type S, which is the highest performance version of the TLX midsize sedan. I really like this car.
You did, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I've liked the design of the current generation TLX since it came out, about 3-4 years ago now? And, you know, they added the Type S a year or two ago. And, you know, so they brought the TLX was the first modern Acura to get a Type S, you know, when they brought back the Type S trim level, which was something that Acura did back in the 1990s, 80s and 90s. You know, they brought it back starting with the TLX. And so the TLX Type S gets a 3-liter twin turbo V6, 355 horsepower, 354, I think, foot-pounds of torque. And, you know, because it's a modern twin turbo V6, that means it, you know, it's direct injected. So it's got lots of low end torque. You know, there's no turbo lag from this thing. There's a 9-speed automatic transmission, or is it 8-speed? I can't remember now. But it's got their Acura's super handling all wheel drive. So that means it's a torque vectoring all wheel drive system that actually works really good. And Acura's had, you know, variations of this super handling all wheel drive system since about 2007 or 8. And I remember when I first drove one in the old RL back then, and in the first generation RDX, you know, the first time I ever tried it was on a track at Waterford Hills Raceway. It's a club racing track north of Detroit. And I was amazed at how good those cars felt, you know, on a track, even though, you know, they're transverse, you know, front wheel drive based vehicles. That torque vectoring system that, you know, sends the torque, can send the torque to the outside rear wheel, send more torque to the outside rear wheel to help it turn in. Just works really amazingly well. Mm-hmm. I've always liked the interior, especially the seats on Hondas and Acuras. I mean, we own a Honda, we have a Civic, but the seats in the TLX are fantastic. The interior is really nicely laid out. The only thing about the interior that, you know, a lot of people are not crazy about, that is probably going to be going away in the next couple of years. I think with the next batch of new Acura models as they redesign them, is that the precision, what they call the precision touch pad.
It still has that.
Yeah. which, you know, I personally have never really had much of an issue with. You know, I got used to it pretty quickly on the RDX, and, you know, it works the same way on this one. That's almost certainly going to go away in favor of a touchscreen on the next generation. But other than that, you know, everything else about this car is great. You know, I think the proportions are fantastic. It doesn't look like a, you know, front wheel drive car would. It's got a long hood, you know, the windshield is pushed back, you know, so it's got those kind of classic rear wheel drive proportions to it. And, you know, it's got nice muscular lines. It's roomy. Back seat's got plenty of room in it, you know, so, you know, easily, you know, room for two couples to go somewhere, you know, and be very comfortable in there, or, you know, two or three kids in the back seat. It's just a lot of fun to drive. The paddle shift works surprisingly quickly. Let's see what else. It's a 10-speed automatic, not a 9-speed. Fuel economy was fine, you know, not exceptional. It's rated at 19 city, 25 highway, 21 combined. I got about 19 in my driving, because, you know, I was driving it as, you know, you should drive a TLX Type S.
Heavy right foot.
Yeah. but other than that, you know, it's got great ride quality, but also, you know, still handles really well. It feels very neutral. It doesn't really oversteer much, but when you push it hard into a corner, you can feel it turn in better than you would expect, given the way the powertrain is laid out in this thing, because of that all wheel drive system. So it works really well. The Type S, goes for, starts at, $57,600. The one I had, including delivery, came to $58,795, which includes an extra $600 for the Urban Gray Pearl paint, which, you know, wouldn't be my choice. I would buy the blue if I was getting one of these, either the Apex Blue Pearl or the Tiger Eye Pearl, which is a sort of,
I love it.
the gold color. I like the TLX Type S. You know, for a premium midsize performance sedan, you know, this is not going to run with like an M4 or an M3, but, you know, it's, you're going to have a lot of fun with this thing.
I think it's a fun car. I think it's sort of an overlooked car. I think sometimes people don't consider it when they're looking for that fun sporty car, and the styling on this is great. It's comfortable, and it is a nice car to drive.
Yeah. Have you driven the TLX Type S, Perry?
I haven't. I haven't been in an Acura recently, but I was remembering one of the first times I drove the super handling all-wheel drive, or Shod, as I used to call it. Because that's what it said on the back of the car. Yeah. Shod.
Shod every time I see that.
You're welcome. but we did a winter driving program with RDX, and there was a spot where you kind of went up a hill and then pivoted to turn, you know, down a different direction. And when you put it in, you know, you basically gave it throttle, you turned the wheel, and you could feel the car just pivot because it would drive power to those outside wheels. So that four-wheel drive system works fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, snow or for performance.
Excellent.
Good. But I'll need to get in that car. That one sounds like a fun
Give Joe a call. He'll get you hooked up.
Yeah.
All right. So this week, of the three of us, Perry, you were the only one that actually went to New York for the New York Auto Show. What were the highlights of the show for you?
So it was a good show. They've, over the last couple of years, it's been kind of scratching to find any kind of news out of that show at all. So it was nice to have some actual world debuts this year. Probably the flashiest of it all, and the one that has the most potential to be interesting, if that's a way to put it, is the Genesis. So Genesis showed what they're calling the magma line. And so, magma, which I just can't say any other way, but magma.
Yeah, but the liquid magma. What was it? The
exactly.
Hours thing. I'm like, no one thought of that when they named it. Okay.
Well, they showed last year at New York, they showed the Genesis GV80 Coupe, and it was in this amazing orange called magma. And so they've now, when you say magma too many times, it starts to sound really strange. But they they showed basically a line of vehicles all with the magma orange, and basically made the announcement that they will now have a performance line coming, similar to Mercedes AMG, BMW M, Hyundai N, which is going to share a lot of its go fast bits with Genesis.
Is that a technical term, Perry? Go fast bits.
Oh, very much so. Yes, go fast bits. Just look it up. So they showed a couple cars. They showed a G80 in the color. They showed this Gran Turismo car that they showed, I believe, a year ago. That's never going to be built, but it's this really cool looking sports car. But the first one that's going to be the first magma line will be the GV60. So they had the GV60 Magma concept, big wheels, big fenders, big rear spoiler, air intakes to keep not the engine cool because it's electric motors, but keep the motors cool and the brakes cool. They did not say anything about what the performance would actually be. They said something along the lines that it would be more than adequate, which is what Rolls-Royce used to say. Yeah, exactly. Rolls-Royce used to say that their engines put out adequate power because they would never publish the horsepower.
Oh, my God.
So I assume at some point we will get to find out what magma will be. Although, as someone pointed out to me, when you think about it, magma moves really slowly. Perhaps they didn't think that part through either.
Maybe they're thinking about the magma that goes shooting out the top of the volcano.
Perhaps that's what it is.
That's super fast.
So anyway, so that was, I think that's going to be really interesting to see. Genesis, has come an amazing way since, they were introduced less than 10 years ago. And now they have a full line of SUVs and cars. They compete very well against the Europeans. They have a full line of electric vehicles that are among the best out there. So I think, having a performance division and, they've already... since Genesis is part of the Hyundai group, they're going to be able to share a lot with what, Hyundai's been doing with the N, especially along the electric vehicles, where they have the IONIQ 5N, IONIQ 6N coming. So I think there'll be a lot of parts shared from those. So that'll be very cool.
Is it reasonable to assume that the GV60 Magma is basically going to be an IONIQ 5N with a fancier set of clothes?
Probably. May have a bit more power just to, because
more than the 140 in the IONIQ 5N.
Well, they've got to have some reason to buy the Genesis and not the Hyundai if all you want is performance.
Well, you just still get that, that rotating shifter ball.
Well, you do get that. So that's worth at least a couple thousand dollars. Yeah. Yes, definitely. But they also showed, they showed Magma as the performance line that's coming. They also showed, I believe it was called the Neolum. Okay, I have trouble saying it.
Neolum? I didn't hear it.
Neolum.
Neolum. It's N-E-O-U.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like new moon. Neolum.
Yes, that's what it means. Okay. It means new moon. And so they built a concept car. It's EV9 sized and based upon that, even though they didn't say that, because it's a full-size electric SUV-looking vehicle, but inside is just two rows of seats full luxury as you can only imagine. Think, you know, Bentley Bentayga, but on steroids. It's gorgeous inside. It has coach doors that open up. And it, keep in mind, this is the concept car. This is not going into production next week. But next year, maybe. They have said in the press release, they said that the coach doors, you know, which are basically the rear doors, rear hinge, so it opens like the old Lincolns. Suicide doors is what some used to call them before that was no longer politically correct.
Say suicide doors.
suicide doors. But they've said in the press release that with this, they have determined that is feasible to build something like that. So could see coach doors on a production vehicle coming. But the interior of this car was very high tech and very high lux. Two bucket seats in the back, you know, that have plenty of leg room. They recline. They have these really thin video screens that come down from the ceiling. The front seats will rotate back so you can, they're not saying it's autonomous, but when you're parked, you can talk to each other if you so desire. It looked really good, and it's an interesting way to take advantage of what could be a three-row SUV and basically turn it into an ultra-luxurious two-row SUV.
When I saw the pictures of this thing, you know, the thing that most immediately struck me is reminding me of is a Maybach, you know, big Maybach GLS type of vehicle.
It even had wheels that were kind of Maybach-like.
Yeah.
Very solid, blocky wheels. I think 24-inch wheels because concept car. But all the lighting is flush with the sheet metal, so there's almost no edges on the car at all. I mean, it's quite beautiful. Sometime in the next year we'll see. You know, Genesis has a GV80. They don't have a GV90. This could be the next GV90.
Or EV90.
Or GV90 EV, or who knows? Or
yeah,
they seem to go both ways.
Yeah. So the screen on the dashboard, I don't think I've seen any video. Does that go up and down? So like when you're in driving mode, does it kind of retract halfway down into the dashboard? The screen looks like it's very tall.
It seemed to be in place. I mean, didn't see it. I didn't see it move at all. That was the position. There were video screens that came down from the ceiling in the back seat that almost like rotated down.
Oh, I can see those. Those look funky. From the side in these pictures, it looks like some weird little venti flappy thing hanging up there. You can't tell that they're actually screens.
It does. It actually, you have to go like behind it and see that they're actually video screens.
Yeah.
And so it's a cool feature. You know, we'll see if, you know, when we might see something like that. But yeah, the screen in front, you're right. The screen does look very tall. They wouldn't let us sit in it. So I couldn't see what that would be like, you know, from a driver standpoint. It almost looks like you could see through the top of it. So it could end up being kind of like a heads up display. I'm not sure, but that's just me guessing.
Okay. Yeah. It's an interesting interior design.
It is. It's futuristic, but not so much so that you couldn't imagine that in a production car. Not the wooden floors.
It's not one of the ones that's so crazy you look at it and think absolutely nothing from here is ever going to be on a car.
Exactly. It's not quite to that point. I mean, the wooden floors, probably not. It also has radiant heat, like heating a Korean home. They had a term for it. I don't remember what the term was, but... and so basically the heat comes from the floor and from the door panels without blowing air into the car. So
on
an interesting way of heating a car. Yes.
Yeah. They call it Ondol. So yeah. And they use this a lot, radiant floor heating in Sweden as well. In Northern Sweden. I remember when I was going there in the early 90s, when I was working as an engineer, the places we stayed always had radiant heat floors, which is great when it's really cold outside. You know, you can walk around barefoot inside and, you know, the floor feels nice and warm. There's nice even heat throughout the room. It's amazing.
My brother-in-law has that in his kitchen and the dogs love it. They just
sprawl. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because it's the best thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, so those were, so that was what Genesis showed. You know, both, I would say those were among the highlights of the show, and those three magma orange cars parked out in front. I mean, unfortunately, the G80, which looks really cool in that color with the high performance, you know, style to it, the vehicle that they showed will be built in limited numbers, only for sale in the Middle East.
Oh, so we don't even.
I don't know why they didn't explain that, but they did not say that there wouldn't be a GV or G80 coming under this line. Huh. It sounds like, you know, there's, it's very little information. This is basically the first introduction of Magma as a product line. So the GV, you know, the GV60 will be the first one. And I think by the time that comes, and that'll be sometime in the next year, likely, it probably will be a bit more defined.
Okay. Yeah. We'll probably see the Jeep. They'll probably have more information on this, like the summer at Pebble Beach or something.
Maybe I could definitely see them the whole doing the Pebble Beach. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right.
So, so other things from New York, Kia K4 made its global debut, which is replacing the Forte. The most exciting news there was the thing they didn't show us. In the video during the press conference, they showed the Kia K4 sedan and this beautiful looking five-door K4 hatchback. Almost looks like a mini wagon. So they had two turntables. I figured they were going to bring that out, and they did not, and made one little mention of it that it would be coming sometime, that they would build.
Why did they do that? I saw all the coverage of that, and it's like, hey, the one big thing they didn't actually, it was like blink fast and you missed it. Like, why did they
have that? I know.
It's cool.
So I did ask PR, you know, Kia PR, and they said that they, you know, they don't want to bring everything out all at once. So sometime within the next year, we'll hear more about that one. So it is coming. So in the meantime, buy our little compact sedan.
It's definitely coming. It's not a teaser like, oh no, we just showed you something you can't have because you guys don't do enough little hatchbacks. It's really coming.
That's what they said.
The K4
could change next month, but that's what I said now.
The K4 sedan design looks a lot like the EV4 concept that they showed in LA and then showed again in at CES. It's got a lot of the same lines to it.
It does. And it looks very much like the K5 also. In fact, they brought it, the other turntable ended up having a K5 on it instead of the cool car. And so it was interesting to see that. I mean, it's like mini me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a small version of it, but the interior is beautiful because it, you know, like every other Kia, they've now gone with a big screen that incorporates both the driver's display and the infotainment system. And that just gives it such a higher end look, especially considering this is, you know, I think Rio is gone now. So K4 is the entry level into the Kia lineup.
Did they give any details on, you know, mechanical stuff, you know, what engine's going to be in this or anything like that?
I believe it's all carryover from the Forte. Although the interesting thing is that the Forte had a turbo engine that put out 201 horsepower, I believe, 201, 202.
Yeah.
This one, same engine, puts out 190.
Okay.
Not that anybody is going to notice a difference of 10 horsepower in a car like this, but it's, they didn't explain why the rating of the same engine went down. The other difference is that the Forte with that engine was available with a manual transmission, and that is no longer.
One thing about the interior that is different from the last several new Kias that have appeared, you know, at least the last several non-EV Kias that have appeared, is it no longer has that touch strip below the infotainment screen that you had to toggle between climate controls and media controls.
I was very happy to see that that's gone. That was a feature I was never a big fan of. I mean, it was an interesting way of making use of space, but I, for those who don't know, it was a panel that you switched between climate controls and audio controls. So if it was not, if you thought you were going to cool the cabin down, you actually turned the volume down.
Which is what happened to me when I first drove the EV6.
Yeah, it's or you know, you want it louder and it ends up hotter instead.
Yeah.
it's very confusing. Yeah. You don't think it would be, but it is. It's super confusing.
Yeah, I was talking to James Bell from Kia about that last year, and he said, "Yeah, we've heard the complaints. We're we're listening. Just stay tuned."
So clearly they did listen. So K4 does not have that.
Yeah. I think when they do refreshes on the others, they're going to change that as well.
That's what I'd expect.
Yeah.
So on the, you know, and it's not to say that it was a completely Korean auto show, but Hyundai was really one of the other big news was the new or revised, I guess I should say, Santa Cruz and Tucson. And so they're refreshes. They're not, you know, they're the main bits are carried over. Engines are carried over, their same platform, so the same interior space and all of that. But exterior for both are slightly refreshed. If you put them side by side, you'll see the difference, but otherwise it's hard to see. Interior is significantly changed though, because again, kind of like the K4, both cars get the big screen and a really nice secondary screen with all the climate controls on it, and shortcuts to, you know, the interface or shortcuts for the infotainment system. So it makes everything much easier to use. They also have said that they've updated the software for the entertainment system so that the reaction time is much quicker than it was before. I never saw it was a problem. I thought, you know, Hyundai and Kia actually had one of the better systems out there. So it will be better, and it also now has wireless Android Auto and Apple CarPlay across the board.
And you know, you mentioned, you know, that secondary panel. You know, one of the probably the biggest complaint I had about the current generation Tucson and the Santa Cruz was that they had this large panel, you know, sloped down that it had the touchscreen embedded in it, and then all of the other ancillary controls were all touch controls. You know, there were dedicated yes. places on that panel, but it was all touch controls. So you couldn't do anything you couldn't change temperature or anything else by feel. You had to tap on it. And so this new panel,
they fixed that.
You've got knobs to change the temperature, knobs for volume and tuning. You got buttons for, to go between the different modes on the infotainment screen to get, you know, home screen, map, search, etc. You've got it's gone back to a lot of physical controls, which I think is a good trend that hopefully we'll see more of. And you know what else? It's got little handles on the vents so you can direct the air wherever you want.
You just can't let that go, can you?
And I will not. I will not until all of those are gone.
Oh my gosh.
The other cool thing. The other good thing is that they've put, I mean, I'm not crazy about the gear selector on the instrument, the steering column. It's kind of an odd thing. It works. It works better than the Mercedes where you think you're putting the wipers on.
I do that all the time too. I'm constantly putting the car in neutral. It's like, whoops.
Yeah. But the nice thing is since they moved it, now you've got your wireless phone charger right next to you.
Yeah.
So it's in the center console because they freed up all the space. Don't need the gear selector in there anymore.
It looks like it's the same one that's on the Ioniq 5 and 6.
So,
that's all right.
Which makes sense. It should be.
Yeah.
So the interior improvements are definitely, you know, good. Not to, you know, it's not a huge overhaul of the car, but the changes are good changes.
And on the Santa Cruz, you know, you've got the same stuff, the same interior, but the front end design is a little more squared off, a little more trucky.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It has that same shape to it and the same grill where, you know, part of it lights up,
yeah,
which I always thought was kind of cool. But it's, you know, again, it's somewhat evolutionary. It's not that big of a change.
And of course,
not that that's a bad thing.
And of course, you got the XRT trims on both of these, you know, which gives you your sort of pseudo off-road
trail sport.
It's trail sport or the wilderness all over again.
Yeah,
exactly.
On what Nicole said last week about the Santa Fe XRT, you know, this could actually be, you know, reasonably capable.
I mean, because, well, I'm like, you know, I think all those little terms, like I said, they give a little capable, but I just feel like it's something of a misnomer. They're like, oh, this is our off-road trim. I'm like, okay, cool your jets, guys. It's not
that. Yeah, it's
you know,
it's not. But to your point, I mean, the Santa Fe, mm-hmm. you know, up till this recent version, the XRT, you know, had different paint,
right?
Like was, you know, body cladding and stuff. So this year they actually have given it off-road tires and raised the ground clearance slightly. For what it's worth.
So I do feel like it's the right direction. Like, we're going to give you an off-road trim. No, we mean it. Not just, we're going to make it look cute. We're really going to do some stuff. So I feel like that's better than just making it like sort of meaningless changes. Oh, they all have red trim. They all have gold trim. Great. Did they do anything? You know.
They look good when they're
off-road. They look awesome when they're off-road someplace where you probably shouldn't be. Yeah. I think
it's like
he actually has some capability to it. Yes.
I guess the other biggest news that wasn't really terribly expected was Nissan Kicks. So Nissan Kicks has been completely redone for 25. It's a 2025 model. And for the first time, it's offered with all-wheel drive. So it's kind of taking the place of where Rogue Sport used to be. So it's gotten a little bit bigger and now offers all-wheel drive. It's really nice styling. I think it looks good. You know, like everything else, big screen inside. Clearly, that's, you know, now we have to look to see what Mercedes is going to do next, because Mercedes always seem to set the trend of what the next big screen was going to be. And hopefully, we're not all going to go to hyperscreen.
It can't get any bigger. I mean, like, the Nautilus has a screen that spans the entire dashboard. I feel like we've reached maximum screenage. We're just going to, like, forget it. You can't see anymore. It's just a screen. It's all virtual.
Well, eventually you'll just be putting on IR goggles when you get in the car, and mm-hmm. there'll be no screens.
That's where it ends. That's where it ends.
So, and then the couple other electrics that, you know, made debuts that we hadn't seen before in person anyway, Porsche Macan Electric was there and kind of off hidden in the corner. But believe it or not, Porsche actually had a stand. It wasn't just the Porsche dealer. So that was a big change for, you know, they even had, you know, someone from PR there. They had four cars back in the corner. And then Polestar was also there. And so they had the North American debut for Polestar 4. So that was nice to see, along with Polestar 3. And sounds like both are coming soon.
Yeah, the 3 should be launching in the next couple of months. And the 4, I think, is probably later this summer.
They said it would be before the end of the year.
Yeah. And I saw the 4 last November at an Investor Day event that Polestar did in Santa Monica. And we actually got to go for a ride in it. And it's pretty impressive. Yeah, it's a good-looking vehicle, even without having a rear window.
I know, it's still kind of odd, but it does look good. And, you know, the cabin looks nice. And so it should do well, I would think.
Yeah. And I think it's priced starting about $56,000, roughly, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Cool.
And then the only other thing that was, you know, everybody's favorite was Subaru had puppies.
Of course.
Oh, well. I mean, that's always the highlight of any auto show.
Like, randomly, the stuff I saw from the auto show was a picture from someone from Subaru, and they're like, yes, of course we had them. And it's just a picture of puppies at their booth.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they didn't have any new cars to show, so they brought puppies. And I looked, and apparently, since they've started in 2018, more than 1,800 pets have been adopted through their program of bringing, you know, dogs to auto shows, you know, basically supporting local shelters, which is really cool. Yeah,
it's really cool. And it is fun. If Subaru ever stops bringing the dogs to the auto show, we're all going to revolt. Like, we'll have a meltdown. Yeah. We're going to be heading to this for that moment of zen and be like, what do you mean you don't have puppies? How am I supposed to chill? I'm stressed out. Where are the puppies?
But we have this new car. I don't care. I want the puppies.
Right. Dang it.
I can see cars anytime. I want puppies.
Cars everywhere. I need a little pen of puppies that I can sit and play with for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The Polestar 4, just double checked on it. Starting MSRP is $55,000 for the long-range single motor. It goes up to $73,000 for the long-range dual motor with plus in performance packs. So should be a pretty impressive car when it arrives, and it'll have 300 miles of range.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
That should be good.
Yep. It should be.
Did you see the Infiniti QX80?
Oh yes. So QX80 was there too. Sorry. I guess there was a lot of stuff
on the show.
So QX80, oddly enough, had its debut in New York the week prior to the show. I did not attend that. It's definitely a step up from where it was, and it was getting kind of old. So it's nice to see them, it's extremely luxurious inside. I don't think I have the specs on handy, but I can grab them here. It's monstrous. it is a very big car. But that's, kind of what they're going for.
Yeah, I actually saw the QX80 in Japan last October when we were there for the Japan Mobility Show. Nissan took us to their design center, and they showed us a whole bunch of stuff, basically all the stuff that's coming in the next 4 years. And I can't talk about any of the others yet.
Oh, geez.
We saw the Kicks and we saw the QX80. It is a huge step up from the outgoing QX80, which, it's been around for a while.
Hasn't changed in a very long time.
Yeah. The old 5.6 liter V8 is gone, as the case, for pretty much everybody, going with twin turbo V6s. So 3.5 liter twin turbo V6, 450 horsepower, 560 pounds feet of torque. The QX80 shares its platform with the Nissan Armada and the Patrol.
I assume there's a new one of those coming soon. Mm-hmm.
I could not comment on that.
I know too much.
The Armada and Patrol and the old QX80, the Patrol is very popular in the Middle East and Africa, and it's a serious off-road, four-wheel drive SUV, big four-wheel drive SUV. Nissan's answer to the Toyota Land Cruiser. And, of course, the Infiniti would be the equivalent of the Lexus LX. And the old one had a low-range four-wheel drive. The new one does not. So this is, it's got four-wheel drive, but it's not, not as serious an off-roader. I think they recognize that, Infiniti customers.
Nobody's taking it off road.
Yeah, Infiniti customers aren't taking this, on anything more than, like towing their boat, to down the trail to their cabin, and putting it in the water. They're not doing the serious stuff with that. If they want to do that,
neither are Land Rover buyers, but that's a whole different conversation.
But presumably the Armada, if and when it is redesigned, will retain that feature. But the interior on this new QX80 is really something else. I mean, it is a huge step up from the old one, which definitely looks dated.
I mean, it's the dashboard is just, the lines on it are gorgeous.
Yeah.
It kind of flows from the Infiniti logo into this, the big screen, that has everything in it, the infotainment, the driver's display and everything else. It does look like, there's still a volume control button, but I don't know about any other buttons.
Yeah. Yeah. Most stuff is in the touchscreen, although it does, you can reach out and move the vents. So there's that.
There is that. This is going to be the new bar for every luxury vehicle.
I just have vents I can reach out and move. That's all I want. That's all I want.
Yeah.
That's it. Small request.
That's the pass fail benchmark. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is now.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. So the new QX80 is more expensive than the old one. It starts at $82,450 for the rear wheel drive and goes up to $110,595 for the loaded autograph four wheel drive version.
It's a considerable jump, and it'll be interesting to see how Infiniti does with that, because Infiniti is kind of fallen off the radar as far as, part of it is because they haven't redesigned things in a long time. It's I think QX60 is probably the newest model they have, isn't it?
I believe so. That came out during the middle of the pandemic, I think, didn't it?
That's already a couple years old.
It was either the 60 or the 55 was the most recent.
Actually, the 60, because that's the bigger one. 55 was like in the middle of the pandemic.
The 55 was the coupe version of the QX50.
Yeah. So yeah.
Right. So it wasn't that big of a. It wasn't that significant of a new vehicle.
Mm-hmm. No.
not like this is.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully that's a sign that Infinity's going to step it up.
One could.
All right. So, Nicole.
Yes, sir.
You were not in New York this week.
I was not. I did not go to the New York Auto Show.
But I did see you in a video from Utah.
Yes, I was in.
He was playing in the desert.
Utah. Oh, God, I was in the video. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I did not watch the link in that picture. Uh-oh, hopefully I wasn't crazy.
No.
So we did. I went to Utah for Easter Jeep Safari, which I have never attended before. And it's not actually an event that's run by Jeep. There's a local four-wheeler club, and they run it. And Jeep participates because the name. Why would they not? It is nothing but people who love Jeeps. It is like Jeep all the things. There's just crazy Jeeps everywhere on the streets of Moab, off-road, all over the place. And what Jeep has done for the last few years is they go and they do some concepts. This year there were four. And they also had us driving the new Gladiator. What is that? What I have to ask you, because I didn't watch register that it was a video. What is the video show? What am I doing in the video?
Oh, I think they just asked you your thoughts on after climbing this ridiculously steep hill with the Gladiator. You got out of there and Roman asked, you know, what you thought about it, I think.
Oh, it was Roman. Okay. I'm like, when did I get on a video and say anything about this?
Yeah, no, it's TFL. Well, so
technically drive impressions are still embargoed for a little bit. So I feel like I can't really talk about it yet. I can talk about the concepts, but I don't think.
Even though it's on video?
I know. I'm like, how did you get that up? I thought the drive impressions are embargoed.
Well, we didn't break the embargo.
Didn't break the embargo.
And technically, I don't think Roman did either.
Yeah. So we can't really talk about, but we did get to take the new, there's some new bits for 2024. They revised how the grill looks. So it looks a little different. Like it matches now with the Wrangler a little more than it did before. You know how they did some updates to the Wrangler, how it looked. Now the Gladiator matches. So it even looks more the same when you're staring at it from the front. And they did come out with a Mojave X and a Rubicon X, which are slightly enhanced versions of those two trims, but they let us take the Mojave out into the dirt, and I can talk about it next week, but we crawled over rocks and went out into the dirt. And it was funny. I think when Roman was talking to me, we'd just driven up a thing called Wipeout Hill.
Yeah, I think that's
not disconcerting at all. Right. And you know, the Gladiator is a truck and the trailer hitch on the back, it sticks out just enough, and they knew it was gonna have a sort of scratches, and I was talking to this little lady and this little man who were traveling all over the country, and they were just sitting there watching us. They were in there side by side, and they're watching all of us drive up here, and they're like, how are you great, aren't you upset about the noise? It's like it's dragging on the back. I'm like, well, it's not ours. She's like, oh, that makes sense, because you just hear that awful like, which isn't a criticism of the Jeep, it's just when you got a trailer hitch on the back of your truck and you're coming up really steep rocks, you're probably going to scratch that little trailer hitch. So we did get to drive that, but it was really fun. We drove all the concepts, all four of them, which the crazy thing, they don't just say, oh, you want to drive it on the road in a little loop. They're like, no, we're Jeep. We have an off-road course. Would you like to drive that off-road in Moab? Would you like to take this one of one concept vehicle? If you mess it up,
probably worth a couple million dollars.
No other version of it. Would you like to take this off road? You're like, sure. Like, okay. So those we can talk about. And that was really cool. Those were actually.
What was your favorite one?
Okay. So there was, I have two. I can't, it's like, I couldn't quite pick one. So they did the Grand Wagoneer, which I've always had a soft spot for because my parents had one when I was growing up. So they did a Grand Wagoneer and they put this wrap on it that's called Spearminted. And it's this like very metallic green. In the sun, you practically need sunglasses. It's like blinding. But there's a teeny tiny, I don't know, maybe 1-inch strip of faux wood trim on there as a nod to when the original had the wood
paneling.
Yeah, the wood paneling. And they did the interior of it in this fabric by a designer, and it looks like a plaid, but when you look carefully, the plaid has little Jeeps in it, like all vintage Jeeps. So it's like a nod to the heritage of Jeep. That was fun to drive off road. And I love the style of it because it's, we crunched out just literally what the car costs, and they have this really cool carbon fiber rooftop a climate controlled little, it's not a tent. I think of it as a tent, but you know, that sits the rooftop.
Yeah, pop-up tent.
Pop-up tent. Okay. That apparently is $30,000 just for this pop-up tent. So we're basically, wow, before we've done any of the coolness to this, this is $130,000. You're just driving up a rock. It's like, okay.
It'll be fine.
You'll be just fine. You're fine. Don't worry about it. So that was fun because it just looked amazing. And also to take something, it's a big vehicle. And we took it up the same things that we took my other favorite, which was the... it was a Jeep Wrangler and it was the Willys Dispatcher, which is again, a nod to Jeep heritage. And it also was green, but it was like element 115, they call the green, which has something to do with UFOs and Area 51. If you know anything about it, I don't, but I was told there were UFO things. In fact, it even had a sticker. You guys. So it had a sticker that when you open the tailgate to swung it to the side, there's like a traditional little alien, you know, little bug-eyed alien. And it had letters that were alien script and as like a little Easter egg. And I looked at it and I said, that, am I wrong? Or is that not actually just alien gibberish? And it wasn't. It was actually Arbesh, which is the language from Star Wars. And it said, it's a Jeep thing.
That's cool. Like,
that's a good Easter egg.
I thought that was a pretty good Easter egg. So that was kind of fun. Like when I opened it up, I'm like, wait a minute. What is this? That one was probably just the most straight up fun because it kind of made it vintage, almost like after World War II era civilian Jeep is what they were kind of going for. So, I mean, it didn't have headrest. It had the sort of distressed leather. It felt very sort of simple. Like there's something neat to having a vehicle that you know is super capable because underneath this, it's a modern Wrangler on the exterior.
Yeah, 4x8.
Right. It's a 4x8. So it's not.
So it was like a modern vintage car.
Yes. Yeah. But there's something, it was kind of weirdly nice to not have the over the top fancy, all the bells and whistles, like the crazy that we have in our modern cars. When you think about it, you're driving off road. You're out there because you want to be off road out in the middle of nowhere. It's a 4x8, so it can run super quiet if you run it in the EV mode. And now you don't have a lot of distraction in the car. So it was just, that was probably just my favorite disc to drive. I like that one a lot. I didn't think I would like that one. That one really just to drive because it was just such a joy. And the Grand Wagoneer because Grand Wagoneer.
Did you get to try out the shortcut? I saw Roman and Tommy. And,
I did. And, Nathan did. Which one? Okay, it sounds terrible. There were eight cars all together. There were the four new concepts and there were four old concepts. Right. I mixed up
the shortcut was the short one. Was the shortened red one.
Yeah.
With no doors.
Mm-hmm. I drove all of them because I was the guy, his name I believe was Dan, who actually physically builds these cars for Jeep. He works with them and they'll say, we want to build this funky version of a Wrangler. And he's like, okay, this is what it's going to take. This is how much time it's going to take. This is how much money we're going to need. And he and his team make it happen. And so he said, you have to drive the older concepts to compare them to the newer concepts because it's not just a matter of they look different because they're each themed differently. But some of these are older. I think the oldest one was from 2009, I want to say. That's a long time. Oh, wow. That is a long time in car technology. And it was fun to, the same reason I like the Willys Dispatcher, it was fun to drive all these older versions of Jeeps and to see two things. One, how different they look. Like really, you see the difference. You can tell the difference. They feel some of them like older cars. Like they're starting to get a genuine vintage vibe to them. But what was so neat is we took those cars and we drove all of them on the same off-road route. There was a little bit of rocks, a little bit of dirt, a little bit of sand. And then one spot where it's a very typical Jeep thing, you get to what looks like a giant rock face and then like, keep coming. And you're like, but it's a wall. They're like, no. You're going to drive over there.
You'll be fine.
And we took all of these on that wall, even these older Wranglers, and they didn't even skip a beat. Like as far as this testament to their capability, it was pretty cool. So yeah, they were all fun.
Awesome.
It does sound
cool. It was very fun. If you ever get a chance to do it, guys, if they invite you to this little, it's a very small program. Oh my gosh, it was just such a hoot to do this. It was great.
And I think, you know, even though, you know, these are concepts, you know, I think most of the parts come from Jeep Performance Parts, right?
Yeah.
So you could conceivably build most of these yourself.
You can get some, but not all the parts. In fact, they had a Jeep Performance Parts is the part of Mopar that deals with just Jeep parts. In fact, the former head of Jeep is now the head of that. Jim Morrison is now in charge of the JPP sort of division. And they had one vehicle, the Gladiator, that was a part of the new concepts this year, was very heavily a JPP vehicle. It had that embossed on the seats. It had fancy leather. It had all sorts of enhancements, some of which you can get and some of which maybe down the line you can get. Like they had an air suspension that you can get. They have these like deployable, they were rock rails, a little deployable step so that you could step in, but then they went right back inside. So then they served as rock rails and they didn't get in the way. There were a lot of cool, and they had like, what do they call them? They call them bikini tops on top. So instead of a roof, it's like almost like you just kind of stretched a really, it seems like a thin little see-through piece that kind of gives you some shade, but still lets in a certain amount of sun. A lot of the components that are on these are JPP parts, and they're going to be or are already available. And according to Jim, what they're doing is when they put all this stuff on here at this event, they're testing. You know, they're seeing how they work. They're seeing how it all comes together, but they're also looking to see how people receive it. You know, when customers see it and say, we absolutely love that, that's the coolest thing we've ever seen, then they go, okay, maybe we ought to make that an actual part that you can buy in the catalog. On the flip side, if they're like, that's stupid, we hate that, why did you do that? They're like, we'll cross that off the list. So it's actually an event where they look and they all of the accessories and enhancements and modifications that people can do for Jeep, the goal is to be able to say, you don't have to go to some random parts supplier to get it. You can just get it directly from Jeep, and then you know that it was tested by us. You know, it fits our whatever vehicle it is, it's going to fit it because we know exactly how to fit it to that. We've made sure that it fits that vehicle and it works for that vehicle. So it is a little bit of a testing ground for the Jeep Performance Parts guys too.
Cool. All right, let's move on. So we've talked about Fisker before. Have either of you two had a chance to drive the Ocean, the Fisker Ocean?
Yes.
I have not.
I did.
But I've
did you drive it at the World Car?
No, I drove it at World Car, but I also drove it. They flew me to Austria.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I drove it there on the like a closed track that they had there, and Henrik was there, and we got a tour of the Magna facility where they build it. It was fun. It was a nice car. It's breaking my heart that Fisker is just like, it's like it's disintegrating. It is falling apart at the seams, really. Every single day there's another piece of bad news, but it was a solid little car. I'm sad that it didn't, they had a great idea. And it's just, I keep waiting. I feel like by the time this podcast go live, that it could be gone. That's
a distinct possibility.
I would say that's very likely.
Like, yeah. We're right at the end of March. And I wonder, like, is April 1st, it's going to be like, and we're done. We made it through the first quarter and we're out. I mean, they had they're being delisted because they couldn't file their 2023 annual report. They lost something, millions of dollars worth of deposits. They delivered full cars and were like, whoops, forgot to take your money, and had to go back and collect the money. Their deal with Nissan fell apart. I saw today, I believe the number was 40,000, 60,000 canceled reservations. So
I think a lot of people are canceling now because it looks, I mean, if there's no Fisker dealer to go get your Fisker fixed at, then
yeah.
And
Given that, you know, some of the biggest problems with this thing are software related, mm-hmm. you know, it'd be one thing, you know, the hardware, you know, you can fix, but you know, if they go out of business, who's going to maintain the software?
No one.
Keep the software running.
They said like every reservation that someone cancels is a $250 deposit. They give you back all but $25, the $25 processing fee. So further to their woes of having no cash on hand, that means every canceled reservation,
I have to give all this money,
$225
back.
Bucks out of their pocket. They're actually having some people who are canceling not just reservations, but actual orders. So when you cancel your reservation, you get back your $250 minus the $25 bucks. If you cancel after you've ordered, they keep $5,000. But like, that's the lack of faith. I am so lack of faith in you. I would rather cancel my order and eat the five, you know, you guys can keep my $5,000 rather than go all in and give you 60 and have absolutely no support. They have people who are actually canceling orders at this point.
I think, you know, probably the nail in the coffin was the Consumer Reports review that just basically tore it apart. And for a lot of consumers, you know, that's the, you know, that's the gold standard. It's either, you know, if Consumer Reports likes it, let's buy it. If not, stay away.
Well, and I think a lot of it was, I mean, that definitely made consumers think twice about buying one. But the behind the scenes of how the financiers are working at Fisker is a little bit horrifying.
And, I mean, you know, from what I've heard from conversations with people, you know, it's tough for any startup, automotive startup, to get financing these days. You know, they went public, their stock price is in the tank, you know, trying to raise new money, you know, unless you happen to be majority owned by, you know, the Saudi public investment fund, you know, your chances of raising any new capital are almost zero to begin with. But from what I'm hearing, it's even worse for Fisker, because basically anytime somebody has a conversation with Geeta Fisker, who's Henrik's wife, also happens to be the COO and CFO of the company. And, you know, it's like, yeah, no, we're not doing business with you. We are not going anywhere near any operation that's got her involved.
She's an interesting character. I met her and Henrik both when we were in Austria, and really genuinely, for all the world, Henrik comes off like a guy who's super passionate about what he's building. He has a vision.
He is
excited. He just wants to build this cool electric vehicle, and he has the best of intentions. And he's relying on people to do the other parts. You know, like, you need to know what you can do and you need to know what you can't do. You can have a great idea, but if you're not the finance guy, get somebody else to do it. If you're not the marketing guy, get somebody else to do it. He has Geeta doing a lot. And I don't know that
she's not.
She was not necessarily the right person.
And how does anybody involved with Fisker, aside on this next to Fisker, in Fisker, say, hey, Henrik, maybe you got to think twice about having your wife do all that stuff. How do you say
that? Yeah, you can't do like, that. Yeah.
I think maybe we need a different CFO. It's like, we need to not have your wife here. What, talk about like a third? How do you do that? How do you do that? So I think it was just the way it was set up. It was, you looked at it from the beginning. You're like, this isn't going to work out the way they think. This isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he has a, you know, he hasn't had exactly the best track record with businesses.
No.
He always has wonderful designs and wonderful ideas, but
yeah, he's business an amazing is not his designer. Strong point.
Like, he's an idea man. He has great ideas for products. His ideas are brilliant, but the execution, he can't seem to collect the right people around him to tell him how to execute it in a way that is financially viable. And, you know, like, this is the second car company for him that's gone poof. And I can't imagine anyone investing not just in another car company, but if Henrik had an idea, would you invest in it? Even if you thought it was the coolest idea, like, he doesn't.
If I was trying to build something, you know, and he did the design, I would certainly, you know, pay him for his design work.
Right.
But that's as far as it would go.
Exactly. So I think it's going to be, it's a little sad. Like, I'm heartbroken that it didn't work out. You hate to see any company that so many people have invested so much time and energy in falling apart. Cause that's literally what we've been watching over the last couple of weeks. Like, every day it's like, oh, what's today's Fisker fiasco? Like, every single day there's something new. But, you know, there's people behind all that. And I feel bad for all the people, but it's just, it never felt like it could come together. And I do think Henrik, like I said, he's a brilliant idea guy. Fabulous ideas. Geeta was not the person to steer that.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's
unfortunate.
Okay, let's see. Fisker. Okay, one more. Actually, two more things I want to talk about. The BMW Vision Neue Class X. So you've both seen this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They've
been showing the I guess you call it sedan version.
Yeah, they have the Vision Neue Class
SUV.
Yeah, was shown last September at the Munich show, And actually, it back CES last year, CES 2023, they had the Vision D, which was basically, you know, that was the sedan that was covered with color e-ink.
And, oh, that's, you know, great.
That's the coolest thing ever.
And, you know, that was basically the design of the Vision D, or the Vision Neue Klasse, which is effectively going to be the next generation 3 Series, an electric 3 Series. And then the new Vision Neue Klasse X is on the same new electric EV platform that BMW is developing, that is an SUV, roughly a little bit bigger than the current generation X3. I'm actually going to see this thing in person in a couple of weeks. I'm going to be at an event in LA where we're going to learn a lot more detail about the whole Neue Klasse program. But a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, this is their next generation, you know, it's their sixth generation electric architecture. You know, it's, they're switching from prismatic battery cells to cylindrical cells. Got next generation motors and power electronics. They're using at least some amount of recycled materials in the cells. And so this SUV, the Neue Klasse X, this is actually probably going to be either the first or the second of the Neue Klasse models to go into production. And it should be in production. A production version of this should be coming sometime later in 2025, I think.
I think that's what they've said. I think they said it goes into series production in 2025. They haven't said exactly when.
And this one will probably be built in Spartanburg, South Carolina. So what do you think of the design of this one?
Harry, you go first.
I mean, it fits with the Neue Klasse that they've been showing. I mean, the first thing that I notice is that, you know, they finally shrunk the kidney.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh my gosh.
You know, it'll be interesting. It's not, you know, the good thing is it's not so outlandish that you can't imagine it being on the road. And they're slowly getting there with the Neue Klasse. I mean, there were a lot of things with the Neue Klasse, with the lights that did all kinds of crazy stuff, and the whole interior, you know, display that basically makes the entire windshield your heads up display.
That actually is coming to production.
That's what I've heard. So it'll be interesting to see how. I mean, I sat in the Neue Klasse
when the lower part of the windshield, so it's not the entire windshield.
Right, but it's kind of the same idea as the Lincoln, except that rather than having it in a screen, it's actually on the windshield.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how well that works. So it's, you know, it's an interesting style. I think, you know, it still fits with BMW.
One thing I like about the design of both this and the sedan is the belt line is actually lower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it actually comes down from the hood line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a nice reversal of the trend we've had for the last couple of decades of going higher and higher. You know, cause I just got a Polestar 2 delivered this afternoon. Ooh, you know, and nice. I think, like, as much as I like it, you know, it's like sitting in a bathtub, you know, very high belt line. And
this for one, the fishbowl.
Yeah. And BMW is going the opposite direction with this. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, when we get to finally get to try this out in person.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting a lot of bets on this whole Neue Klasse thing. They've been talking about it for literally for years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
yeah,
it'll be interesting when the first one finally comes out. Cause that's also the problem when you're planning a car for this long, you know, it's like by next year, all your ideas from this year are already obsolete. Yeah. So you got to plan ahead.
Yeah. Well, the basic architecture, you know, is something, there's going to be a bunch of different vehicles built off this platform, but they're also taking the components of this and putting it into a bunch of other vehicles. So things like, you know, next generation, you know, electric X5 and other vehicles are going to use the same batteries, the same motors, kind of like what Genesis has done. You know, so the GV70 and G80 EVs are not EGMP vehicles, but they use a lot of the EGMP components in there. And BMW is doing the same thing with the Neue Klasse.
So. I think, you know, like you're talking about how things look and get dated so quickly, they get a lot of credit for it actually still looking like it's future moving forward, the styling, the design. I think it looks good. I'm just so excited about the grill because I was out the other night and there was a BMW parked. I had to walk right in front of it in a very narrow sidewalk. And I was like, good gravy. That's all grill. Just giant grill in my face. Yeah. I had to see it has shrunk back down.
It'll be interesting to see if they, I mean, they've already said that they're not getting rid of the internal combustion engine, that that's continuing. Mm-hmm. So would they use this body style for non-electric vehicles?
Well, they're still going to have, you know, for at least, you know, into the, at least into the early 2030s, you know, they're flexible platform vehicles like the 5 and 7 right. series. And, you know, the,
so I would assume those styles, I mean, obviously they'll be changed by 2030, but
right.
It'd be interesting to see how, if the electric vehicles, you know, the newer class remain, a distinct look from everything else.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll find out in a couple of weeks.
No.
All right. Speaking of EVs, you know, one of the concerns that a lot of people have about EVs, especially used EVs, is the health of the battery. You know, because, you know, we've all had phones and laptops and tablets and stuff that after a couple of years, the batteries are completely shot and they won't hold the charge anymore. And, you know, that has generally not been the case with EVs, except for Nissan Leafs with their air-cooled batteries. But, you know, most other EVs generally, you know, unless they've been really severely abused, the batteries tend to hold on pretty well. And, you know, after 8-10 years, you know, they still have typically 85-90% of their original capacity. But to try to, you know, put people's minds more at ease and help, you know, with some of the resale values on EVs, Cox Automotive, they bought a company a few years back called Spears New Energy Technologies that, among other things, you know, they do battery recycling, but they also have a team that's been developing methods for testing batteries and evaluating the health of batteries. And so now, you know, they're launching as a product, you know, for their Mannheim auction division, a battery health report system. So it's a VIN specific EV battery health that, you know, each vehicle that comes in to the auction, they test the battery and provide a battery health report that goes with that particular car. So, you know, if this one, you know, is in, if this battery's in good condition or if this one's been abused, and then they can price those vehicles more, you know, accordingly based on the battery health. Because one of the problems, you know, with a lot of EVs, you know, very low resale values because people don't know what condition the battery's in.
It'd be interesting just to even see what the trends are that they're finding, since that doesn't typically get happen, you know, get tested. You know, if they've got, you know, 500 Teslas come through their system, it'd be interesting just to see, you know, of a certain age, does the batteries, you know, is there a trend that they all start dropping off?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's not really tested right now.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to see, you know, and I'm sure Cox will be providing some reports. You know, they usually do that. You know, they provide data on all kinds of things, you know, in terms of resale values of vehicles, average transaction prices. And I'm sure over time that they will be providing us with some updates on, you know, kind of the test results they get from testing these batteries.
Yeah, should be interesting.
Yeah, that's a neat idea.
All right, last one is the Xiaomi SU7. So, have either of you ever heard of Xiaomi?
Can I just tell you? I was reading. I did not say that way in my head. I was the SU.
I don't think I said it in my head.
just so everyone knows, it's XIAOMI. I'm like Xiaomi. And how do you say it, Sam?
Xiaomi.
Yeah, no, that wasn't what my brain wanted to do.
Xiaomi. So, they look kind of like Porsche Macans.
Yeah, so Xiaomi is a Chinese company that has been building Android phones for probably 12, 13 years now. So they're a phone manufacturer, and they, you know, they also build other consumer electronics devices, but they started off doing phones. You know, they make tablets, they make smartwatches, they do all kinds of consumer electronics stuff now. and they recently decided to get into the business of building EVs too.
As one logically does after building phones. Sure.
Exactly. I mean, it is clearly the next logical step in the progression, isn't it?
You know, you build a phone, phones you can and build a car. Use phones in a car. Yeah, we should build cars for people to use our phones. Yeah.
Perfect sense.
So the SU7, they just launched it in China. You know, right now there's you know, Xiaomi doesn't sell any products in the US. They did briefly look at selling their phones in the US market. And I think they did sell a couple of other devices here. But there's no plans for this car to come to the US. But you know, it's a pretty nice looking, you know, four-door sports sedan. It's electric. They claim a range of something like 500 miles, but that is on the Chinese light duty test cycle, which is based on the old
stuck in traffic for 3 hours.
It's based on the old NEDC test cycle, which was notoriously optimistic. So realistically, you know, it's probably closer to, you know, around 300 miles of range, mm-hmm. which is actually, you know, that's a good amount of range.
Yeah. Especially if you're, you know, building your first car.
Yeah. And this thing's going to have a starting price of $30,000 in China.
That's cheap.
Yeah. And you know, they've got versions of this, you know, that come equipped with, you know, they're equipping them with the hardware for what they hope will eventually be a fully automated driving system. And unlike a certain other EV manufacturer, they're not just using cameras. You know, they're also putting radar and even LiDAR on these things. It'll be interesting to watch. This would be an interesting one to watch to see, you know, if they can gain any traction in the Chinese market, because there's so many EV startups in China. You know, so many brands, and I think Geely actually, I think, just launched another one, which is kind of crazy. Oh, wow. They already have so many. We'll keep an eye on this one to see if it, see what kind of, if they have any success in the Chinese market.
It looks, I like how it looks. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Then we have one listener question to answer. This one's from Don. And, you know, related to the previous discussion on the New York Auto Show, Don asks, I see the 2025.
Did we miss a word?
Yeah, I think so. Hold on a second here.
Well, he does refer to Hyundai pre-orders.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Santa Cruz or.
It was about the Tucson.
Okay.
Okay. So the subject line of the email was 2024 or 2025 Hyundai Tucson hybrid.
There we go.
So I see that the 2025 was at the New York Auto Show. Your thoughts, should I wait for this one to hit the market? This will be our last car. Does Hyundai do pre-orders? Listen to you on Leo Laporte's show and Wheel Bearings, of course. Thanks in advance. So you're the only one that's actually seen this thing in person, Perry.
I would wait. I mean, the interior upgrades are enough. I mean, just the return of the physical buttons, that's a bit of a personal thing, but it gets really annoying to not have them. And so I think the interior is enough of an upgrade that, you know, you're not losing anything that, you know, that the previous model had. They have not announced pricing, so I don't know how much it's going to go up. So obviously that would be a deciding factor as well. But from the sounds of it, trims are going to be about the same as far as, you know, content goes. Everything comes with a bigger screen, so might go up a little bit, but I don't expect a huge price increase because, you know, the underpinnings are all the same.
Okay.
So I'd wait.
I think too, where he said this is going to be our last car, so presumably they want to get this and have it, they're going to have it for a while. I'd hold off. Just get the most current version of it. I would definitely hold off and get the new one.
Yeah. And just for that, just for the interior changes, I would definitely concur with
that. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
Cause as much as I like the Tucson as it is currently, you know, I did not like that center stack setup.
It was annoying.
All right. Well, Perry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And we'll definitely have to have you back again soon. And that's it for this week. We will talk to you all next time. Bye,
everyone.
Bye.
Harry, I won't be talking to everyone next.